Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Dub, as we get closer and closer to tea time in Augusta, I think one of the most entertaining stories that is out there is the mad genius that is DeChambeau. Bryson, like, we have no idea what exactly he's going to look like. And I don't know, Dub, if you saw the video, but there was a video of him on the practice range.
I saw it.
Just hammering.
It was unbelievable.
I mean, just absolute. Like, when I watched that video, Vijay Singh was like standing beside him, like in disbelief. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, have they sped up the video, or is he actually swinging that fast and that hard? And they're like, no, that's real. And so I love this guy. I like when people disrupt, you know, sort of staid organizations. And it certainly is the case that DeChambeau's like the guy who shows up at the normal kind of quiet pool party and just decides to run and do a cannonball in, right? Like, everybody else is kind of swimming around quietly, like, or, you know, it's just like, if you've ever been to one of those pool parties where nobody's actually in the water and everybody's kind of just standing around the edge of the pool party, and then DeChambeau is just like going to jump in and there's a huge, like, there's splash that goes everywhere. That seems to me to be like him right now.
Well, he's the scene in Caddyshack where all the caddies get to go to the pool for 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And they are just totally disrupting everybody's peaceful, quiet time. But you're right. The way he's swinging the club in that video clip, he looks like one of the long drive competitors. Like, he is literally swinging as hard as he can. And his swing speed is like just off the charts, even compared to the tour pros. Like, it's unbelievable. Now, do I think he's going to be swinging like that in the actual tournament? Probably not. But you can't totally rule it out. I mean, there's some par fives at Augusta National that are totally gettable. 13 in particular, if he turns the corner on the par 5 13th and hits one good and hits it in the fairway, I mean, he could have 100 yards into a par 5. Like, that is totally possible.
What's wild about this to me, the wildest I would say, is he's now moved up to the co-favorite at FanDuel alongside of Dustin Johnson. And let me mention this to everybody out there. We've been mentioning it all week long. Right now, if you go to FanDuel.com/Clay and you bet on Jordan Spieth, on Rory McIlroy, and or on Dustin Johnson, you pick one of them to make the cut, then you get back $100. That's a 20-to-1 payout. A $5 bet turns into $100. That is a tremendous value. I'd encourage everybody to go to FanDuel.com/Clay. You got about an hour left until tea time begins to be able to get that bet in if you are able to. FanDuel.com/Clay. So you are bullish on the Bryson DeChambeau hype that has now led him to the co-favorite alongside of Dustin Johnson right now at FanDuel to win the Masters this weekend.
Well, you say hype, but when you think back to November when last year's Masters was played, the hype was truly off the charts. It was the only thing people were talking about. I think he was like 6-to-1 to win in November, which was just totally ridiculous, and he barely made the cut. Now, I don't know if you'll remember this, but one of his tee shots, I believe it was on the third hole early in the week, he hits the ball, it lands in the rough, but they just never found the ball. It got embedded into the ground, basically buried itself because he hit it so hard and high that they never found the ball. He ended up making triple bogey there. So that was one of the worst breaks I've ever seen on a golf course. But this year, he's got another year under his belt. And I mentioned yesterday, the Augusta National is the course where experience matters the most and your past results matter the most. I really could see him being there on Sunday afternoon. I didn't personally bet him, but if he's getting the green jacket put on him by Dustin Johnson on Sunday evening, I would not be surprised one bit.
You know, it's interesting, too, because I think he's great for golf, right? Because polarization, whether people want to believe it or not, conflict is the reason why we consume most content. And some of you are out there and you're like wrinkling your faces. You're like, what are you talking about? Conflict is what is the fuel for virtually every story that exists in the world. And let me explain what I mean. You wouldn't watch a superhero movie if there wasn't an arch enemy of that superhero competing against him. Superman without Lex Luthor is a pretty boring dude. Batman without the Joker doesn't really have a lot of sizzle or sex appeal. Right now, who is a villain in golf? Right? I think Bryson, there's not a lot of great villains in sports in general because all these athletes have gotten so wussified because of their social media. They're afraid of the comments that they'll get and the mean things that people might say about them. Wrestling, and actually we're going to talk to The Miz. I'm going to WrestleMania this weekend. I love wrestling because there's a heel. There's a guy who is willing to play the role of bad guy, and they do it so well. It used to exist in sports all the time, right? Like if you go back and think about it, Reggie Miller was a great heel. Charles Barkley was willing to be a great heel. Rick Mahorn. Remember Rick Mahorn? Everybody hated Rick Mahorn. Relatively speaking, a lot of those hateable stars don't really exist now. Bill Laimbeer, his entire campaign was predicated on being hated. In fact, the entire Detroit Pistons were willing to be the bad guy to Michael Jordan's good guy in many ways. And I feel like DeChambeau, he may be a great dude. I know nothing about him. I don't have any personal relationship with very many golfers. But I feel like he's leaning into that villain role. Don't you feel like that a little bit? Like, and maybe villain is the wrong phrase exactly. But he's definitely leaning into the idea of being a mad scientist.
Oh, well, there's no doubt. And when you think of the sport of golf in general, change is not really a word that comes to the top of the list. You know, it takes a while for the style to adjust and so on. But there's two guys really not named Tiger Woods, and I'm not comparing these two guys to Tiger Woods in the sense of them moving the needle, but Bryson DeChambeau and Jordan Spieth right now are the two guys that people who don't typically watch golf are tuning in to watch this weekend because Bryson DeChambeau is hitting the ball further than we've ever seen a player at this level hit the ball. And Jordan Spieth is back from a four-year hiatus, coming to a course where he's won in the past and come awfully close a couple other times. Without those two guys this week, I'm not sure there's a ton of interest in this tournament at all from the casual
in general,
fan.
Because Tiger provokes a lot of reaction. Most people, I think, are Tiger fans, but he still provokes a lot of reaction. Are people really strongly allied one way or the other with the Rory McIlroys and the Justin Thomas's and the Xander Shuffley's and the, you know, like, I just don't feel like there's anybody. Sergio had a little bit of a villain component to him, right, where people were willing to believe negative things about him. But there aren't that many, you know, sort of golfers who are comfortable wearing the black hat at all.
Well, there's one in particular, and that's Patrick Reed. There's
yeah,
a lot of people.
Everybody hates Patrick
but
Reed.
But it's hard to be a true villain. I mean, it sounds weird to say.
But do people really like Patrick Reed?
That's what I'm about
Reed
to say.
Too?
Like, there's really nobody that likes Patrick Reed. Like, 80 to 90 to maybe 95% of golf fans just really don't like the guy because he's had cheating scandals in his past, which is a big no-no for golf, obviously. And we had something like that occur just a couple months ago at a tournament that he ended up winning by five strokes. But there's just not a whole lot likable about the guy.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties in with a lot of times if you're a good villain, people, you have a certain fan base for you, right? But by which I mean that you may be unlikable, but you're so unlikable that people start to respect the swagger that you play with. And I don't feel like that's true with Patrick Reed. I do feel like it could be true with DeChambeau.
Yeah, he's changing the game. And look, I'm kind of on the fence with DeChambeau. There's been moments where I really just don't care for him, but he's growing on me. I have to admit, over the past basically 6 months, he's really grown on me, and I don't have a problem with it. And I think he's good for the game.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Jeff, I know you get out on the golf course every now and then. Will you have interest in watching the Masters starting here in a little bit?
Yeah, I'll watch the Masters. I don't know if I'll bet on it. I mean, you know, maybe I'm just kind of like one of those, you know, like old school people. Like, I just miss like when Tiger's not playing. I don't think I have an attachment to golf quite the same as when Tiger's not. You know, excuse me, when Tiger is playing. But I'll watch the golf. I don't know if I'll bet on it. I'm not very good at like basically future bets. I mean, these are essentially what they are, right? You're just betting on something to win a tournament. I'm terrible at those, man. I don't think I've ever won I don't win them very often. So I like more like my action to happen now. So I might bet some groups or something, but I'll watch it. I mean, it's the Masters. Like, why would you not watch it?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Speaking of Tiger, we're going to talk about this a little bit. We haven't talked about it much on the show. I'll talk about it in the next segment. You live in L.A. Obviously, we had you on to talk about when we talked to you that week, we talked about the Tiger incident. Does the traffic accident, the fact that he was driving 85 basically in a 45 accelerating into an accident, does that seem strange to you? Does there seem like the fact that it would take this long for all this info to come out?
Well, originally they said that he was late to an appearance, and that's why he was in that area. So that makes more sense. If he's late to an appearance, he's just rushing to get there, and he's going very fast. Like, that makes sense. If it was just like a Sunday stroll and he was trying to go to breakfast, I think that was kind of weird. But if we're late to an event, most of us are speeding to get there. So that's not that surprising. But it's been taking a while to get details. I'm just glad that he wasn't impaired and the story isn't bigger than that. So, I mean, it sucks, man. But I don't know. We've all been speeding to get to an event. I mean, that's 40 miles an hour over. It's a lot more than maybe I'd be comfortable with. But, hey, I mean, he's late to an event. He's got to get there.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. Follow him on Twitter. You are down in Dallas right now, but you have been working on a new – basically, it's like quarterback camp, except for offensive linemen. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it should be on the next couple of weeks. It'll be on Fox Sports on the digital side. And, I'm now back in Dallas. We actually filmed this a couple of weeks ago in Dallas as well, and we did one guy in Los Angeles. So, I just got the idea, like, offensive line play is very misunderstood, and I like talking about it and teaching it. So I got together with some people at Fox. I was like, hey, can we do this idea? And it came together very fast. It's pretty awesome that they're able to make it work this quickly. And I'm pumped to be a part of this. And we're going to make it great. You're gonna come away knowing a lot more about offensive linemen, offensive line play than I think you ever could have guessed. And people are going to have a lot of fun being part of it.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. All right, the Deshaun Watson story. Did you watch any of the accusations being now made publicly by the women, two of them, I believe, who are accusing him of sexual assault? Did you watch any of that video?
I did not watch it, but I kept up on what was happening. So, I mean, I read the transcripts.
So,
enough.
As a player now, all right, so Nike and Beats by Dre, like everybody now in the wake of this woman going public and telling her story, are pulling their endorsements away from Deshaun Watson. The Houston Texans have issued a statement basically deploring the allegations against him. They haven't really taken a step yet. What do you expect that most Houston Texans players are thinking right now as you are in April? The draft is at the end of the month. I think it's fair to say that it's highly unlikely that Deshaun Watson is participating in any kind of team events for the next several months. What do you think players are thinking? What would you be thinking if you were on the offensive line associated with Deshaun Watson?
Yeah. I think there's going to be half the players think he's innocent. Half think he's probably guilty, and really nothing's going to change that unless it goes to the courts. I think if you're a player on that team, you're worried that your quarterback won't be there this season, right? And again, if you think he's innocent, you're pissed about it. If you think he's guilty, you're probably pissed about it too, right? That he ended up being a scumbag. The thing that I can't get over, and we talked about this I think a couple weeks ago, is that now there's been 41 masseuses, right? They've said that 20 that I believe are 21, right? Or whatever number there is.
22, I think, is the official. The numbers keep changing, but I think it's around 22 right now.
So over 40. So 22 that have accused him of sexual misconduct. And then another, was it 20 that came forward and said that he was gentlemanly and right, and nothing happened? That's a lot of masseuses, all right? So
yeah.
I think we need to get over the idea that he was using these women for their work. Like, if you are a professional athlete, and even a guy like me, who I'm not Deshaun Watson, I'm not a bazillionaire, I can't just, I can't afford to have someone live with me full time, but I had one massage therapist in New York. I had one in Kansas City. I have one now. When you find the person that works best for you, you keep them for many reasons. One is that they get to know your body, right? So 1 week they work on your hamstring, and next week they feel that same exact hamstring and can see how it responded to the week of practice, to what they've done, and you find that person and you stay with them. So the idea that he had 40 masseuses, like, he wasn't using them for therapeutic reasons, right? He wasn't calling them up to say, hey, can you fix my hamstring? It was probably just trying to hook up with them, right? Like, I think that's fair to say sometimes. Now, I guess he did use some of them for massages, but just the therapy part of this is odd because I cannot recall another athlete that has used so many massage therapists in 4 years. It's very odd from a therapeutic perspective.
You think a lot of athletes would hear those numbers and be like, something else was going on here, like, well, even more so than your average person out there, I think, hears, you know, 40, 50 masseuses, whatever it is, and they think it sounds strange. You think your average athlete would think, based on what they know about what they have to do to get their bodies ready, that would sound even stranger to your average athlete than it might sound to your average person to us listening right now?
Yeah, look, it just sounds like he was hitting up girls on Instagram, like other athletes do, right? Or any other single person, or whatever, if you're married, good luck doing that.
Some athletes that might also be married hitting up girls on Instagram, but yeah.
So it just, that's what it sounds like he was doing. Now, and again, he wasn't using these women for their therapeutic reasons, because again, if you find someone you like, you tend to stick with them. So, it's a very complicated situation right now as far as what the NFL does. I think I saw today that normally Roger Goodell doesn't put anyone on the commissioner exempt list till the season starts. There's really no point in doing that right now, especially because they're not even going in the building right now. But the NFL has been they've been quick to punish in the past.
Yes.
And I'm curious if they're going to do anything now. It's very complicated, right? I mean, it's not been, it's not through the criminal justice system yet. You have 22 women saying he did something. You have 20 saying he didn't. I don't know what the NFL is going to do about it.
The NFL's in a tough spot. The Houston Texans are in an almost impossible spot, because they've gone from the guy they thought was going to win them a Super Bowl, back when they signed him to a $160 million extension, which was just back in September, to now having a trade demanded. And you're like, okay, we don't want to trade him, but I'm sure there was a lot of interest because he's a 25-year-old star quarterback, to now wondering, not only is Deshaun Watson not going to be playing for you, but he might not be playing for anyone, and you're kind of left here with no really good options going forward.
Yeah, and they're kind of in a bad spot because they don't have any draft picks.
Yeah, no first or second round draft pick right now.
They're in a bad spot. And I think that, you know, I had said for a while, I didn't think they were going to trade him this year. And I still think that's probably what's going to happen. They were not going to trade him, but now they're definitely not going to trade him, right? I mean, there's no one who's going to sign him. So there's no point even going down. I mean, no one will trade for him right now. There's no point in going down that road. No one's going to trade for a player who might be on the commissioner's exempt list. So from just a football perspective, it kind of puts, the Texans in a big bind here about what to do at quarterback position. Again, this will work itself out in the legal system, and NFL will do something about it at some point.
Are you optimistic in any way that let's shift gears here, speaking of another quarterback, Sam Darnold traded from the Jets to the Panthers. You live in Charlotte. Are you optimistic at all that Sam Darnold is a good fit for the Panthers? Do you think he can be their version of Ryan Tannehill? Can he redeem himself and prove he's still a top caliber quarterback in the NFL?
Well, it's a big coaching change for him in a positive way, right? Go from Adam Gase to Joe Brady, who we know was an architect of Joe Burrow's big season at LSU. And, still something to prove, I think, in the NFL side with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady. But we saw from the Panthers last year is they're going to play hard. They're going to give it their all, and they're just really young. And so I think Darnold adds an element of kind of hope to that team. I think that he fits what they want to do offensively. We saw, like I said, Joe Burrow in that offense. So that kind of is what Sam Darnold is. It's more, he's more that than Teddy Bridgewater. So I'm excited to see him go. I think it should be a good reboot for him. He's there for 2 years at least. They picked up his fifth year option. And we have 2 years to find out. If you were to become good, we have to continue to change the way we think about quarterbacks and put a lot more of it on coaching, because I think for a long time, you know, guys just failed and we just accepted they failed because they sucked. And I think we're getting to a point now where guys can fail and then, oh, they have better coaching, and all of a sudden, not that they're great, but that they're just much better, right? They can play. We saw it with Ryan Tannehill. And just a better coach can make you a better player at that position. And if Sam does this, then, again, I think we have to kind of reevaluate how we look at evaluating quarterbacks when they're not very good.
We also may have to consider – it used to be that quarterbacks got a long time to figure out if they were the guy or not, if they were a first-round pick. Just in recent history, Schwartz, we've had Josh Rosen kicked to the curb after a year in Arizona. Dwayne Haskins didn't finish a second season in Washington. And now Sam Darnold, even with all of his injury issues, 3 years and he's gone. That's pretty crazy, right? For guys that have had this kind of money invested in them to be gone this fast.
We're seeing a change in the NFL. I think it started with what you mentioned, Josh Rosen, and really with what the Chiefs did with Pat Mahomes too, is, you know, you give a couple years, maybe 3 years, and you realize it's not your guy, you move on. And for a long time in the NFL, you were stubborn to move away from a guy you drafted. It was looked at as a sign of weakness, of failure, and it still is. I mean, you know, the Jets fail with Sam Darnold. There's no way about it. But now they get Zach Wilson, right? So they get to reboot themselves very quickly. And we're just seeing teams say, hey, man, we're going to find our guy. Hey, look, I think, Clay, it's very easy to make the case that a team should draft a quarterback every year until they find one. Like, it's that important of a position. And so that's what teams are doing now. They're like, hey, man, it's that important position. We need to go find someone, and let's go do it. If Darnold's not our guy, all right. Josh Rosen's not our guy. If Alex Smith is not our guy, go find our guy.
We're talking to Jeff Schwartz. What, as we move forward, it now seems clear that number one overall in the wake of the trade of Sam Darnold, number one is going to be Trevor Lawrence to the Jags. Number two is going to be Zach Wilson to the Jets. If you were in the San Francisco 49er organization right now, and I know you haven't broken down film of quarterbacks like you do of offensive linemen, but Trey Lance, you've got Justin Fields and also Mac Jones. Who to you is going to be their pick? Who should be their pick?
Well, we got Schefter and Daniel Jeremiah talking about Mac Jones being their pick. All I'll say about this is I just don't understand the reasoning. So people have said, well, Shanahan likes Matt Ryan types or Kirk Cousins types. And, you know, Kirk Cousins was his dad in Washington, and we've always had rumors he wanted to trade for Cousins and wanted to trade for Jimmy G and did obviously just trade for him. And you've had Matt Ryan in Atlanta. Okay, that's all great. But those are the guys that he sort of had to work with, right? Yeah, they traded for Jimmy G because they weren't going to trade for Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, right? Like, these guys weren't available. So now you look at the draft, and you have Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields. To me, drafting the guy with, like, the least amount of upside, which is Mac Jones out of those three guys, doesn't feel like what you would do if you traded up and trade away multiple first-round draft picks. And I get the idea. I'm fully on board of trading draft picks for the guy that you love at that position. I just can't believe it's Mac Jones. Like, it's a quarterback friendly system. So people will say, well, Mac Jones will succeed. Well, then show us to Justin Fields and Trey Lance. Like, if it's quarterback friendly, then anyone should succeed. So wouldn't you take the guy with the higher upside? Wouldn't you take the guy with the more mobility, with, you know, the guy who can get you plays with his legs, which is now how the NFL is moving towards. I can't buy that Mac Jones is the option here.
All right. And then my last question for you, and we'll give you an opportunity to amend it going forward. Who is the most sure thing in your mind in the draft? A guy that you're like, hey, for the next, you know, 5 years of his contract, you can plug and play him. He's going to be outstanding. He's going to be a stud at the next level. Who is quarterbacks? We don't know, right? I mean, it's a total crapshoot as to who's going to be great and who's going to be bad. Who are the one or two guys to you that you're like, this dude cannot miss in the NFL draft?
Well, it has to be Kyle Pitts, right? I mean, you know, the
I agree with you on Pitts. I think he's going to be a beast.
The tight end is such an important position. There's not one offense in the NFL that's elite that's not special at that position. And I'll go with Penei Sewell, the tackle from Oregon. Obviously, I'm a little biased there, but he will start his first NFL game at 20 years old. That's incredible. The amount of upside in that body at only 20, man, he's got a kid's body still. Like, he it's unbelievable how much room for growth he has, and he'll be the first tackle taken. So I think those two guys are candidates. But Pitts, man, he's such a matchup nightmare. There's nothing, you can't guard him. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I think Pitts is – I believe, and I said this on the show, I think, already, but I think one, two, three are going to be quarterbacks. We know two of those three. We'll wait and see what the 49ers are going to do. I think Kyle Pitts is going to be the fourth pick if the Falcons draft at four. I don't think they're going to take Justin Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones, whichever, you know, two of those three guys will still be available. I think it's possible somebody will want to trade up because they love whoever one of the quarterbacks still is on the board, and maybe the Falcons trade down at that point. They get good value. But I believe if they draft at four, I think they're going to take Kyle Pitts, the tight end out of Florida, for those of you out there who may not be as big a college football fans as Jeff Schwartz and I are.
I agree.
And then they would roll with Matt Ryan, which if you think about Julio Jones, you think about Calvin Ridley, and then you pair him with Kyle Pitts. I mean, that's a pretty explosive offensive trio for Matt Ryan to be able to work with.
And I think Matt Ryan's still young enough where you don't have to get a quarterback now.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's what the decision that will be made going forward by Arthur Smith if he drafts at four. Jeff Schwartz, appreciate the time, my man. Knock it out going forward. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, take care, bud.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Danny G is quarantining all week. We're now up to Thursday. Those of you may be aware that he went to the Rockies game against the Dodgers. As a result, has to quarantine in his L.A. area home. Let's go ahead. I believe he says that he is awake. We're going to continue to have wake-up checks on Danny G all throughout the week here. And I believe that we are ready for an Animal Thunderdome. Is that correct, Danny G?
That is correct. Roberto, cue the music.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Man, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
All right, boys and girls. We haven't had an Animal Thunderdome in a while. It should be a good one. Some of you have been asking for it. Danny G, what you got for me?
Got to start with this one. You've probably seen it. The giant lizard that's gone viral in the supermarket.
It's amazing.
I was texting with Dub yesterday about this story. How can you call that thing a lizard?
I thought it was when I first saw it, I thought it was an alligator. And I was like, oh, my God, can alligators climb the wall like that? And then when the thing finally got to the top, I was like, oh, that's a lizard. Is that a monitor? What kind of lizard is that?
It's an Asian water monitor. You know, perfect timing, this story, with the Godzilla versus Kong out in theaters and HBO Max. And this looked like a scene from something like that. It was rampaging through a 7-Eleven in Bangkok, Thailand. You're right. It was scaling, this monster reptile was scaling a shelf of milk, knocking off cartons. And the onlookers in the video are gasping. And, you know, you can hear ladies screaming and... these things grow up to 8 feet long. It's the world's second largest lizard after the Komodo dragon.
The Komodo dragon is really deadly, too, by the way. Wasn't it Sharon Stone's husband who got attacked by the Komodo dragon back in the day? I feel like he was like the publisher for the San Francisco Examiner.
Yeah, and a lot of people online were confusing this lizard with the Komodo. And this article from the New York Post says that despite their massive size, they don't really pose a huge threat to adult humans, although an expert at the University of Michigan Museum of Zoology said that a dead infant was found partially eaten by monitors in southern Thailand in May 2020.
How does it get into the 7-Eleven?
They say, yeah, at the end of the article, it says that they think it was because of the humid outdoor temperatures that it came inside.
So it just wanted air conditioning?
Walked right in the front doors.
Oh, yeah. It just walked right in. I mean,
it walked right in and went to that shelf and scaled up to the top of the shelf.
So what did they do to get rid of it? Just call, like, animal control in Thailand? It feels like Thailand has a lot of animals and regularly is appearing in the Animal Thunderdome. Doesn't it?
Yeah, they are definitely. Yeah, they're definitely up there, probably with, what, Alaska and Australia.
Australia is always on the Animal Thunderdome. I just think they have so many deadly animals in Australia that that's a regular part of the equation as well. So a lot of people have seen that video. It went viral. What else you got for me?
All right, let's go to South Africa for the next Thunderdome. A teen was bitten by a puff adder snake.
Oh, I've heard of this puff adder, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what happened, by the way? I was at an event recently, and one of the moms said that her son got bitten by a snake, like, playing in the creek here where I live in the Nashville area. And I just was filled with so many different questions, like a 10-year-old kid. If that ever had happened to me, I don't know if I would have ever gone outside again. And she was like, yeah, he did pretty well. It wasn't a poisonous snake. But the idea, like, I don't know if I'd ever be able to sleep again if I got actually bitten by a snake like that.
The details of this story are
It's not going to be good for me. Yeah.
This teenager was on a family hike in Drakensberg last Friday. And the night before they went on the hike, his dad, Sean, says that they were having a family conversation about dangerous snakes that they might see on the hike.
Yeah.
So his son, Jude, pulled out a snake book. And his dad says, we read up on the venomous snakes that we might encounter. There were four species, with a puff adder being the worst. So they set off on this hike to look at the mountains there, and Jude led the way on this four-mile hike. As they were running up the hill, he says he felt a sharp pain. He thought he stepped on a thorn, but he looks down, and he sees the puff adder in the middle of the trail.
Oh.
He immediately runs to his dad and asks his uncle to wrap a shirt around his knee and apply pressure. They know the snake is deadly. They were over 3 miles from the nearest road, but his brothers, Warren and Greg, took turns relaying Jude by piggyback, running flat out the entire distance and did not get tired. They got him all the way
to the main road. How old is the kid? Do we know?
He's 15.
Okay, so it's not like he did. I mean, he has a substantial weight to him, right? It's not like it's a six-year-old. So they ran with him piggyback style for 3 miles to get him to the road.
For just over 3 miles. Can you imagine that? I mean, obviously, I guess your adrenaline
kicks in
over.
Probably, but still,
yeah.
I mean, that's pretty. I mean, trail running is difficult in general, much less with a kid on the back. Okay, so they get him to the road. Then what happens?
Then they were able to call for paramedics, and they were transported to meet an ambulance. They gave him some anti-venom. He was fortunate to be able to live through this.
Oh, good. You've given us so many awful kids die stories that I wanted to know how this ended. Did it end with the poor kid dying from the puff adder bite, or was he going to survive?
They said he survived because of how his brothers were able to get him quickly to that main road.
Wow, that's awesome. As a dad,
that's
with
something his brothers can hold over his head for the rest of his
there's
life.
There's no doubt. And as a dad with three sons, I would like to think that my sons would be capable of such performance. Right now, it would be kind of a disaster, I think.
All right. Now, I saw you a few days ago post. I think it was on your birthday. You posted the video of your cat.
Yes, I have two. But we have two. We have two Bengal cats. My wife,
yeah.
They're more popular in the household than I am. I've said before that on the Travis family power rankings, number one is my wife. Number two is my youngest son. Number three is my middle son. Oldest son is four. Cat one that is able to use the litter box is five. Cat that cannot use the litter box is six. And I'm seven. So I am. I might rank somewhat highly in sports talk radio classifications. I am very low in the Travis family household.
So you can appreciate this story because the rest of your family, at least, would be really sad. At the beginning of the story, a Washington State woman says her 19-pound cat was missing for 28 days before being found in a place you will not be able to guess. Caitlin Wurtenberger says that the house next door to her Union Gap home was vacant and under construction when her cat Piper, a 19-pound tuxedo cat, went missing from her house. So she put up flyers, she searched the area, but there was no sign of Piper. She says that 28 days later, after her new neighbors had moved into this refurbished home, one of them told her that they had been hearing meowing from inside the house for about a week. So they invited Wurtenberger to come in and search their house. She found the feline stuck in their fireplace.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
She's a big cat. I didn't think she could fit down a chimney, Wurtenberger told KEPR-TV. I didn't want to get my hopes up too much. It was always kind of in my head that possibly she wasn't going to come back, but I still had that feeling that she wasn't really gone yet. Wurtenberger took Piper to a vet who said the cat was dehydrated and had lost about 10 pounds during the time she was missing. They don't know for how many days exactly she was stuck in the chimney.
You must be getting old, soft in your old age, because all of your Animal Thunderdome stories have been positive so far. They have
there
happy
hasn't
endings.
Been any deaths.
Well,
yeah, there hasn't been any deaths.
This happy endings. It's almost swim in the ocean season, so I'm sure there's some shark attacks that are coming back in the near future. We need also, by the way, to encourage everybody. We haven't done 5-star reviews in a while. There's been a lot of stories we've been chasing. Now, by maybe tomorrow, we'll do some 5-star reviews. If people want to go give a 5-star review, go to iTunes, download Outkick, and search out my name, Clay Travis. Give us a 5-star review, and we will be ready to roll.
Yeah, and if you see any great Animal Thunderdome stories, especially that end with death, not child death, so I've gotten enough crap for that over the years.
Yeah,
but if it's
an
adult who died from an animal.
Yeah. You can send it to at Danny G Radio, Animal Thunderdome, yes. Officially now that we're getting closer to spring and summer again. We've had so many sports going on. We're kind of getting back to some form of a normal cycle, although the NBA is not really going to start, I don't think, till like May 22nd in the playoffs. But we got time for Animal Thunderdome, 5-star reviews, all that. Make sure that you go give us a 5-star review, and you can search out Danny G Radio at Danny G Radio and share the latest on the Animal Thunderdome. How's the quarantine going in general?
Not bad. Been watching a lot of baseball and cleaning and doing a lot of work emails and things like that. So I've been keeping myself busy.
Good deal. Braves, by the way, finally got a win. They lost their first four. My 10-year-old was super happy. They won the doubleheader against the Nationals, so they surged back to 2-4 with double wins there. Danny G, appreciate the time.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are joined now by a guy that I will be watching some this weekend as WrestleMania is inching closer and closer. He is Michael Mizanin, I believe is how you pronounce your last name. I don't even know exactly because I know you as The Miz. And so, first of all, thanks for getting up early with us. Second, how good of a show, how big of a show do you think it's going to be with WrestleMania back in front of fans, which should be pretty outstanding?
One, you were very close. It is Mizanin. And two, I cannot wait for WrestleMania. Live audience, we have not felt the energy, the electricity of a live crowd in over a year. Granted, we've had virtual audience. WWE has done a tremendous job with the Thunderdome, and everybody has given it rave reviews on our virtual fans. But to have real life feeling, real life audience there is going to be second to none. I mean, that's what we feed off of as superstars.
You know what? I've been a fan of yours for a long time, since all the way back at the Real World and Road Rules Challenge, which I still am addicted to. I think it's such a fun show. But I remember when you started, you know, sort of transitioning into being a professional wrestler and being known as The Miz on the show. Did you really ever, when did you start thinking, hey, I can have a career as a wrestler? Like, at what age, and did you really expect when you started to make that transition that it would ever go as well as it has?
I'm still in awe of the fact that I'm not only a WWE superstar, but the only 2-time Grand Slam champion in the history of WWE, meaning I have held the prestigious, most coveted title, WWE Championship, multiple times, the Intercontinental title multiple times, the United States Champion multiple times, as well as the Tag Team Championship multiple times. And if you want to throw something else in there, I've held the Money in the Bank contract multiple times. It's like, it's crazy to me. Never would I have expected, being a kid growing up in Parma, Ohio, that I would amount to anything, let alone all the accolades and awards that I've been able to achieve. But, you know, it just goes to show hard work, dedication. Whenever someone tells you you can't do something, believing in yourself and saying that you actually can, not listening to all the Twitter feeds out there telling you how terrible you are, how negative it is out there. But I've always tried to generate a positive attitude, and that's what I think has gotten me so far in my life.
You know, it's interesting. I always talk on the show about taking advantage of opportunities when they arise, particularly now, because we got a lot of younger people who listen to the show. And it used to be, and you know, like you would get a job and you might work there for 30 or 40 years. The reality is now for a lot of people out there who are teenagers or in their 20s, you may only work 3 or 4 years at a variety of different jobs over the years. So you have been a guy who obviously was willing to grab opportunity in maybe non-traditional fashions. How did your career start? So you are a college kid, I think, and you decide to audition for the real world. Was it a total lark? Did you have any kind of idea that, hey, if I get a little bit of a profile, it could lead to a wrestling career? What was kind of your anticipation? Or were you just like a lot of people out there, like, oh, this seems cool to try out, and then it led to that?
Didn't even WWE didn't even cross my mind. Like, I never thought I could ever be a WWE superstar. I mean, these guys were 6'7", full of pure solid muscle. How am I going to be able to do that? So when I was at Miami University of Ohio, I was in my fraternity, and I remember watching TV, and Real World was wildly popular.
Yeah.
I remember watching the Real World New Orleans,
yes,
season 9, and they had a commercial that says, do you want to be on the Real World? And I answered, yes. Well, try out. And I said, okay. So I tried out, went through a ton of, I guess you can call them auditions. First was like a kind of video that I made myself to show who I am. Then it was like a 50-page application. Then I had like this weird, so back then we didn't have camera phones. We had these VHS camcorders. So I set a VHS camcorder in front of me and a speakerphone, and the person would interview me and I would have to speak to the camera, kind of like they do in the real world. And so I answered the questions, and after like 6 or 7 interviews, I got cast on The Real World. I never thought I could ever do it. Never in my wildest dreams. No way. It was one of the most popular shows out there. 60,000 people try out. All my friends are telling me there's no way I'm going to make it. And somehow I did. After I made it onto that show, created the character called The Miz, it would have been one of those things like, it would have went viral if viral was a thing back then. Like, there was no MySpace, no Twitter, and no Instagram, no social media. So, you know, you watched TV, and Real World was the most popular show on cable. And I created that character, and after that, I said, you know what? Even though I'm not 6'7", full of pure solid muscle, I'm still going to determine to become a WWE superstar.
We're talking to The Miz. What's it like to go from a regular guy who's in a fraternity at college to suddenly going on a television show that, as you mentioned, is so wildly popular in a pre-social media age that when you leave that show, I would imagine almost everybody between like the ages of, at the time, 14 to like 30 years old, basically in the entire United States, recognizes you in some way. And this is not a situation where like you worked your way up, you know, like you were a bit part of an actor in like a small movie. Like, it's almost an overnight thing, isn't it? What was it like for you to have that level of fame that quickly for basically being yourself on some level?
It was crazy. I mean, we got invited to do New Year's at MTV and help host the show. I was like, oh my God. Like, it was surreal. Like, everywhere we went. And I remember there was only like 2 episodes of that season with The Miz in it. But
yeah,
once The Miz came about, I was no longer Mike ever.
Yeah.
It was always, anytime I walked down the street, The Miz, The Miz,
yeah,
The Miz. And it was crazy. I didn't even know how to deal with it, because no one tells you how to deal with instant fame, like where everyone knows you. And granted, I'm an only child. I love attention.
Yep.
But there's moments where you're like, can I have a moment with my, like, sometimes you be on a date, because I autograph looks cool and everything. But once a line starts, it's kind of like, okay, sorry, my bad. You know, but you don't want to be rude to the people that are fans.
You know, it's funny. I met CT once, who was on all those Real World Road Rules challenges. And I was like, hey,
really?
Who comes up to you the most? And he was like, bro, women 18 to 34, which is the funniest answer ever. But I thought it was interesting. How does the fame of reality television compare to the fame of wrestling and the fans who react to you? Because you've had a little bit of a different perspective on that fame coming from MTV and now being a WWE superstar. Are the fan base reactions different based now than they might have been back when you were a young guy? Younger guy.
Well, when I was in my I first got to WWE, I could tell if a person was a WWE fan or
right.
a person was a real world fan. One, a WWE fan is always wearing WWE merch. Like
yes.
they're wearing the merch of their favorite superstar. They are dedicated. They love everything and anything WWE. You know, so you kind of had a feeling and a grasp of where. So now I don't really get. I mean, I don't get recognized for real world anymore because it was 20 years ago.
Right.
Sometimes you're in an air, but a lot of people are like, oh, WWE, oh, Miz and Mrs. I love your reality show on USA. So it's, you know, I've been on so many things now that, you know, I think I'm just kind of widely recognizable, and sometimes you don't even know from what you've just seen something that I was on.
How does it feel to have not only fame for yourself, but for your family and be on television in a way where people feel like they know you? There's obviously been positives and negatives associated with reality television as it pertains to family style relationships. What's it like for you?
I always looked at it like when I said I was going to do Ms. and Mrs., I wanted to give people a real feel of what it is like to live in our shoes, my wife's and myself's shoes. You know, we're WWE superstars. We're on the road all the time. We want to give you an inside look. But we didn't want it to be another reality show where it's all about drama and sadness. We wanted to cheer people up. We wanted to make people laugh. Because honestly, in our real day-to-day life, that's what we do. We laugh a lot. So this show is a family-friendly show that literally, if you could sit down and unwind, especially with all the drama that's going on in the world, and just sit down with your family and laugh at all the stupidity that happens in my family. And it's cool to see, you know, my dad and my mom and, you know, Marjo, my mother-in-law, get a little fame. It's fun to see, you know, my dad get recognized. You know, whether it's because he was in the ring at one of the WrestleManias or it's because of Miz and Mrs., my dad thinks he's the biggest star in the world, and it's kind of fun, you know?
How does it feel to walk out into the ring to get ready to fight at an event like WrestleMania? What can you compare it to for an average person that is out there listening right now for you as you enter onto that pathway to walk down to the ring?
You know, I wish I could compare it to something, but there is nothing quite like it. If you sit there in the audience and you feel the electricity, you get a taste of what it's like to be a WWE superstar because you're part of the show. And, you know, there is nothing quite like WrestleMania. Like, as much as people are like, oh, Super Bowl, World Series, it's not like it at all. Like, our fans are interactive. Our fans are part of the show. I mean, they boo who they hate. They cheer who they love. And hopefully, you know, this Saturday when I take on Bad Bunny and Damian Priest, myself and John Morrison, you know, hopefully they'll be cheering me. But who knows? Because Bad Bunny is arguably one of the biggest recording artists out there right now. The guy's won a Grammy this year. I saw him at the Super Bowl with J-Lo and Shakira. He has a huge popularity. But the problem is his fans that he's bringing into WWE are going to get a rude awakening when I sock him in the mouth and he's not going to be able to sing for a year.
I think there's two kinds of athletes. The kind of athlete that wants to bathe in the adulation of a home crowd when they make a shot or score a touchdown to win. And the kind of athlete that loves complete silence when they shock or stun or upset an arena or a stadium. Which in your ideal world is better? The jaw agape silence or the raucous celebration of talent? Which would you prefer?
I enjoy the celebration, but I want everyone to celebrate with me. You know, when I beat Bad Bunny, you know, this Saturday at WrestleMania, I want that entire crowd just to be jumping up and down, high-fiving, taking pictures of themselves, celebrating. And I hope that they take a moment that lasts a lifetime, because that's, as WWE superstar, our job. Our job, you know, at WrestleMania is to create moments that, you know, families can take away with them and remember for the rest of their lives where they were when that moment happened.
Has an athlete that you maybe grew up a fan of, or even a wrestler that you grew up a fan of, come to you and been like, dude, I love what you do, I'm a big fan, and has that happened to you where you're like, man, I can't believe insert name here is a fan of mine? That's crazy. I'm sure it's happened to you at some point.
Had it happen last week, I'm walking down the hall and the immortal Hulk Hogan is there for the NWO induction at the WWE Hall of Fame, which everyone can see on Peacock. He comes up to me and goes, man, I am a fan of everything you're doing. And I go, wow, thank you. So I'm in awe. You know, I mean, Hulk Hogan, the reason why I took my vitamins when I was a kid is because he told me to, say my prayers. I tell you my prayers because Hulk Hogan told me to. And then here's this guy saying, I'm a huge fan of everything you're doing, whether it's in the ring or Miz and Mrs. You are just, you know, you do it with a smile. You're a hard worker. And I was just in awe. And it touches my heart every time I think about it, because it's like, it's the immortal Hulk Hogan, you know?
I've got kids. I know you do too. Talking to them, last question for you, social media. You mentioned kind of earlier in the interview that you can get sucked into a lot of negativity. If you read mentions, if you read comments, we got a lot of kids who listen going to school. They're in the car with their parents, starting off the day. What would you tell them as a guy who is obviously in the public eye and is an entertainer about the value or non-value of allowing people to influence the way you feel on social media?
It's all different on the person. And I guess you have to gauge on who you're talking to. And if it's kids, you know, the reason why I love being a bad guy in WWE is because I encourage people to say negative things to me. If you want to, because I feel if they're saying negative things to me and how they can't stand me, that's my character on TV. Yeah. I'd rather them say negative things to me than to say negative things to their friend, to the person that they don't like in their school. Like, I'd rather take these kids that are negative attention away from, you know, school and take it away from those kids that might not be able to take the criticism or the harsh words, because I use harsh words and negativity, and I look at it and I go, okay, I'm going to let that fuel my fire, and I'm going to prove them wrong. Because maybe if I prove them wrong, the reason why usually people are negative is because they can't see themselves doing it. So how could anyone else do it? And if I do what they say I can't do, then maybe they'll believe, hey, if he did it, maybe I can do it. And maybe, just maybe, that'll bring a little bit more positivity in the world.
Good stuff, my man, The Miz against Bad Bunny, Saturday night, WrestleMania in Tampa. I'll be there on Sunday. I can't wait to watch. Appreciate the time,
yeah,
my man.
Yeah, definitely watch it. It's on Peacock, baby. On there. Peacock in the United States. So you're definitely going to want to watch it. And Miz and Mrs. the next day, April 12th, Monday, right after Monday Night Raw, 11 p.m., you're not going to want to miss all new episodes of Miz and Mrs. If you want something to laugh out loud with your entire family, definitely check it out.
Appreciate it, my man. Thanks for coming on with us. Enjoy
the weekend. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the interview.
That's The Miz.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.